Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 25, delivered on April 29, 2019. The title of this lecture is Capital Structure.
Today, capital structure. But before I do that, I did promise that I would finish up the Harbor Tool example in cash flow analysis. And then I'm going to put up some of this on the web as I had promised, so that you can see this in action. If you are actually into finance, but there are other areas of business where this might be just as useful to you. Taking this off the board, and I want to find my Harbor Tool example. As you have seen, the tax shield that arises from capital, from depreciation, is better off for large companies with lots of pre-tax income. It really is almost a non-factor for a small company. As you saw with the example with Kellogg, they got a pretty decent tax shield on their overall pre-tax income from their taking on this project with the gluten-free breakfast items. Matter of fact, it saved them a total of $6 million. So a project that looks like it cost $15 million actually doesn't cost $15 million, it costs $9 million because of that tax shield that is protecting taxable income. Now, just as a last one, before I move on here, let me get you to the example of Harbor Tool. New product line, and it's going to knock $10 million off pre-tax for the getting the product ready for market. It was new. Wait a minute. New pastries. No, that. I apologize. I'm getting old. That's not new pastries, new tools next year. $320 million was their pre-tax without taking into consideration this project. Now, Harbor Tool, we're going to say it's in a 40% tax bracket, actually 39%. But, I mean, it just makes it easier to do. Why did I write pastries? I was hungry, I think, and I'd been doing the Kellogg example. Okay. Pre-tax with the product and pre-tax without the product, as you can see, on 320 pre-tax at 40%, they're going to pay $128 million in corporate taxes. With the new product line, Harbor Tools pre-tax drops from 320 down to 310, simply because of that extra cost operating expense there at the beginning. So they are now going to pay pre-tax. They're going to pay tax of 40% on $310 million. So they have saved a total of 128 minus 124 million. So they've saved $4 million. Surprise, surprise! A $10 million project times a marginal tax rate of 40% creates a tax shield of $4 million. Not hard at all. That is one of those almost gimme questions for the final exam, by the way. It's just, I mean, just show me you can take 40% or whatever I tell you on this, on a number, and see, okay, there's my tax shield. Now, an interesting thing is that without defending these giant corporations that are paying no taxes, forgive me for using the word, the uneducated on finance matters understand that a lot of times your tax is lower than you think it should be because of these tax shields from new projects. Okay, you don't want these companies to have these tax shields? Well, you're not going to have all these new projects. How does that work for you when we have less new hiring because there aren't as many projects coming online out there because these companies aren't realizing this tax shield? If you want to cut that tax loophole or whatever you want to call it out, more power to you. Don't bitch, though, when it comes down to the difficulties of getting jobs. Is that wind or what is that? I hope it's not the apocalypse, not until finals week. Free cash flow. And as you can see, just make sure that you add back the depreciation. The reason you take it out at the top up here is that it is going to create the tax shield, which you need to get back to get to your earnings. But then you add it back in after you have found your earnings to get to work your way towards the free cash flow. So you take it out where it's supposed to be taken out by accounting rules because that's how you get that tax shield. And then you add it back in after you've gotten your accounting profit, your net income, your earnings, whatever you want to call it. It's really simple. I'm making it a little bit bigger than it is. Now, going back to Cisco for just a minute, we got the incremental earnings for Cisco. The difference between the incremental earnings and the incremental cash flow, just to have a quick look at it, we have to recognize the $7.5 million that Cisco spent up front. That's real money out of the pocket. That's the real deal. And then we have to bring back in the $1.5 million in depreciation that we subtracted back out. And those two will actually go together like this. You see that you get down there to your incremental earnings. That's just accounting, and I mean it's simple accounting. There's nothing hard about it. And I'll probably put one of these on the exam. It's nothing tough. It's just arithmetic. However, then you also have to add back in years 1 through 5 the straight-line depreciation that you had hacked off for accountants. You had to do that depreciation up there to get that tax shield into the machine. Now you've got to add it back in. The depreciation really didn't happen. What really happened was the capital expenditures and the initial operating expenses. Now that happens in year 0. That happens before the project ever gets underway is you get your capital expenditures and also your startup costs. And in this case, you see that the purchase of equipment was a $7,500 capital expenditure that really did happen in year 0. So you're bleeding out your nose before you even start selling the product. That's just going to be the reality of it. One of the things that drove me crazy, there were a few times when I would start consulting for a firm, and they had actually somehow managed to get a few of their products put together, and they were selling, especially with a service company, was starting to sell its services before it had laid the groundwork in year 0. It was already underway, and then they were saying, well, I guess we're going to need to spend some money because we got a few problems. Well, yeah, you should have done that up front. That's why before the year before a project begins, you should have the whole pro forma laid out for 5 years, 7 years, whatever it is. And as you can see here with HomeNet of Cisco, we had the year 0, they spent $7,500. That was real capital expenditure. Notice that for accounting purposes, that was strung out over 5 years as $1,500 in each year. Now, in real accounting, you would have probably done that as an MACRS, so those numbers wouldn't have been level. It's just Excel to do that. But then you notice that, sure enough, your incremental free cash flow, after you take out the real cash that was knocked out of your pocket by the initial capital expenditure, and you add back the year-to-year depreciation, which really didn't exist, you see that you're climbing out of a hole. Year 0, you've got negative $7,500, And then you come back into positives in year 1 through 4. And then there at the end, one last punch of $600 in year 5 after the project closes up shop. So essentially, this is just a pure net present value problem. What's the net present value of this cash flow stream? Your initial cash outflow is negative $7,500. And then your cash flows for years 1 through 4 is $3,420. And in year 5, you've essentially, it's kind of like a salvage value almost of $600. And you just find the present value of it. And this is just saying what I had already said to you. Going back to the IOTA, the Internet of Things appliance, or the Internet of Things stuff. Really? And this table is terrible. I should have used a white font on that, and I did not. As a matter of fact, let me try something here. No. See if you can see that a little better. Really, that didn't help much at all. Let me get a white. There we go. That looks a little better. Well, you can't see the title, but anyway. Okay. Slideshow from the current slide. That was the Internet of Things project. There's in year 0, there was the capital expenditure, $6,500. And then you straight line that in depreciation under the operating expenses for the 5 years. And again, notice a 4-year project, you've got the depreciation tail. You have other things in year 5 too, so that's not just a loan thing up there. But at the same time, you're going to run through the numbers and you'll see that, again, at the end, all you're going to do is ask yourself, what's the net present value of this future expected cash flow stream? Now, there are going to be other things that you would want to put in there, especially the change in net working capital is not in this example. But what I did want to do was show you very quickly okay, now I'm going to pull this up again, and I'm going to grab a discount rate. Now, this was actually a fairly risky project, so I wouldn't use a discount rate of 5, 6, 7%. I'd probably put a pretty stiff discount rate on this of maybe 12%, because it is a risk. This was risky at the time. There are a lot of technologies that have been proposed that just didn't come about. But that's changing now. They're sort of making things happen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do apps finance, and I'm going to do net present value. And I'm going to say, okay, let's take a 12% discount rate, comma, and then we're going to put in 1900, oops. We're going to put in the negative cash flow, which was, in this case, negative $6,500, comma, open the braces, and this just gives me a chance, mainly I'm doing this just to give me a chance to remind you of how to do NPVs, because I will ask that on the final exam. Just a straight up NPV problem. All you have to do is have your calculator with you. And 6,500, and then we've got the open braces, 1,900, comma, 1,900, comma, 1,900, that's 3. Comma, 1900. And then, comma, that's 520 there at the end, 520. Close the braces, second, close the parenthesis, it was a no. Now, in the final example, where I add in the changes in net working capital, it was still a no, interestingly enough. In matter of fact, Let's see what the internal rate of return would have been. And again, I'm doing this just so you can review that little stuff. Okay, now, second entry. Now I'm going to edit this, and I'm going to change the NPV to apps, finance, internal rate of return. And of course, to do that, I don't need a discount rate. Enter. The discount rate would have to have been under 9% in order for this to have been a yes. Specifically, you would have had to use a discount rate of something under 8.96% to have gotten a yes for this project, accept the project. And with the risk level involved, it'd be hard to justify an 8.95% interest discount rate for a project this risky. Now, they aren't as risky at all, so the discount rate would legitimately be lower. But at the time, no, it was not. So they didn't do it. Another company did with lower costs. And if I'm remembering right, the lower cost, the big thing was that upfront capital expenditure wasn't as big. It was around $5 million. And then it was capitalized over the next 4-5 years. But it was a no. And it was actually not this big of a no, because in the real world example, they were loading depreciation up front. And so they were getting more of a tax shield on the front end because they were using an MACRS instead of a straight line. So they were getting more tax shield up here on the front load than they were on the back. Go.
Where are you getting the 1960?
I think that's 1960, yeah. No, no. Now, it's my eyes, okay? When you get to my age, I mean, I can't see my pork chop in front of me when I'm eating. So I just hope that it's a pork chop and not something like Man of War or squid, okay? Or a cat, you know. I'm sorry. At least someone finally brought up, let me do the whole example, and then you brought up that I screwed up something. But it was still a no. It was that number actually looked kind of familiar, but that's probably how I used 1900 when I did this myself. But that gives you an idea of how we do this valuation. Because you see, companies themselves, we've got all these great ways, you know, the stock price, the dividend, the constant growth model, perpetual growth dividend, horizon value, and all that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, though, those companies aren't actually that interesting. The ones where you have a chance to make money are companies that are private and for projects that no one has ever done before. And in those kinds of cases, this is the way we have to do it. We have to project free cash flows generated by a company that's private or generated by a single project that has never been done before. And so This is the life of companies, and a lot of things that you see happening now, new products are coming out on the market and all of that, it is the result of this kind of free cash flow analysis. So you think about a company like Samsung. Samsung was, it will try to project free cash flows from new technologies of phones that it brings online. The problem comes in a classic example with Samsung, where they do have a new technology that was at the forefront, the foldable phones. And everything was a go. Yeah, let's bring them on the market. They're going to be extraordinarily expensive at $2,000 a pop. But we think that based upon our pro forma projections, it's a yes. What they didn't predict was, though, that their phone sucked, that it would crack and break and split and do all kinds of things. That's the unknown factor, and that is where Samsung made its big mistake, not padding in enough money to make absolutely sure that this new technology would actually work. The same is true for Tesla. there's such a sense of hubris that they can't imagine that their cars will do things like the one in the parking lot. Did you see the video of the Tesla that caught on fire? I mean, that was just kind of sad. I just sat there, damn, that was a pretty car too, you know. But, you know, on the bright side, there was no one in it. On the bad side, because no one was in it, Tesla won't be sued back to the Stone Age, so maybe Clueville will call them. You don't kill people with your cars. But, you know, that's just me being a little fussy about that. Anyway, I'm going to give you a quick quiz here, and then I'm going to go on. I want to finish the topics of the semester with a brief, or very brief, explanation of the concept of cost of capital. No matter what, you're going to pay for money that you use. Regardless, well, it was money that the company made, so that doesn't have a cost. It does, because that belongs to the shareholders, which means that it has a cost, the opportunity cost of having money that belongs to the shareholders. So no matter how you cut it, no matter what you use for funding your company, internally generated equity, externally generated equity, well, it's going to cost you something. The thing of it is that equity is expensive. It is very expensive. And new equity is the most expensive money of all. And then the next most expensive is your earnings, because they belong to the shareholders. They are equity too, but they're internally generated equity. So they are costly, but not as costly as new equity. The worst way that you can fund a project is by issuing stock, raising money by doing an IPO or a follow-up offering. The next most expensive way is to use your earnings to do it. The least expensive way is actually debt. Now, that having been said, we are going to use equity and we're going to use debt. Debt seems like, well, why wouldn't we, if debt's cheaper than equity, why wouldn't we always use debt? Because eventually, if you borrow enough money, you start having to pay a lot for it because you're risking default. I mean, I first saw this when I was setting up some money at loan agreements with a bank for a company. I was one of my first consulting jobs. And they said, okay, the first $250,000 or something like that, we will be charging 8%. From $250,000 up to $750,000, we'll charge 12%. Anything you need above that, we're going to charge you 20% interest. So in other words, that higher rate at higher margins of borrowing represented the greater risk that the company couldn't pay it back. So in other words, debt does get more expensive than equity eventually. The weighted average cost of capital, let's see if I can find a marker that actually functions here. Try this. The weighted average cost of capital, there, is actually the weight of debt in your portfolio times the after-tax cost of debt. Now, you get to deduct interest, okay? You do. So, in other words, the after-tax cost of debt is the pre-tax cost of debt times 1 minus your marginal tax rate, because you get to subtract your interest expense. It's just like depreciation, except depreciation isn't real. Your interest expense is. So now, but also plus the weight of equity in your portfolio times the amount of equity you have. And these are absolute levels. That is your weighted average cost of capital. And you can just go into, I mean, it's really not good to do it this way, but you can just go into your financial statements, if you want, of a company and look at the balance sheet Okay. Real quick, let me do one real quick here. I'm probably going to regret doing this. NFLX. That was weird. Oh, I didn't choose company filing search. Maybe I should do Target because I'm asking for it, trying to do Netflix. If I look at the 10K, and I find, is it that hard to, for them to call something the balance sheet? There it is. Now, if I looked at the total debt, and I'm looking for the liabilities, long-term debt, there, 10.223 on total assets. And what's their total asset value? 41.290. Then the weight of debt in the portfolio would be 10.223 over 41.290. And the weight of equity would just be 1 minus the weight of debt. And if I did that very quickly here, pull up a calculator, and I do 10.223 divided by 41.290, that's of 24.76%. And the weight of equity would just be 1 minus that. This is actually almost a classic one. This is approximately 25% debt, 75% equity. Now, what you would do is you get your cost of debt. Let's say that the cost of debt is 6.0%. And the cost of equity is 15%. And Target is in the marginal tax bracket of 40%. So in other words, the weighted average cost of capital, and I'm just pulling those numbers out of nowhere, would be 0.75 approximately times 15%. Whoops, let me do it the other way. Sorry. 0.25, try that, times 6% times 1 minus 0.40 plus 0.75 times 15%. This is the weight of debt, the cost of debt after taxes. Again, the weight of debt times the cost of debt after taxes. And this is the weight of equity times the cost of equity. Remember, you don't get to deduct dividends until you've paid your taxes, so there's no tax shield there. And if I crank that out, I'd get 0.25 times 6% times 0.6, 1 minus 0.4, plus 0.75 times 15%. So their weighted average cost of capital is 12.15% overall. It turns out that there is an optimal capital structure. It looks very much to me that Target has found that the cheapest place that they can be as far as capital is when they use 25% debt and 75% equity. In other words, if I am looking at a weighted average cost of capital curve, if I have 0% debt here and 100% debt here, which would be the opposites for the equity, if I use zero debt, it costs me the cost of equity, 15%. As I add debt, which is cheaper, it starts falling. However, if I borrow too much, debt starts to get more expensive. Target appears to have found that 25% debt is the optimal capital structure. It is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. Now, you have been with me for 17 long weeks. If I repeat a definition three times, word for word, do you suppose that's going to be something on the final? Yes, yes, I think so. This is actually something that is companies maintain. In matter of fact, I have even seen offerings of stock where they said, we really don't need the money except that we're off our optimal capital structure. We've got too much debt and too little equity, so we're going to issue some common stock. Apparently, they had been drifting because you earn money over time. Their equity had taken them this way, away from the optimum, so they had to do something to move themselves back toward their optimal capital structure. So in other words, there's an important point here about financing projects. Whether you are a small company or a large company, there is something important about knowing at least a good estimate of what your optimal capital structure is. And with that, I would like to have some volunteers. My volunteers that said that they would do this with me. Madam and sir, and while we are here, it'll take just a minute to prepare you to see this. I have here an investment banker. She specializes in debt. She would provide the company that I'm going to introduce you to, she would provide that company with borrowed funds. I could borrow the money from her. Over here, I have an investment banker that specializes in common stock. She would underwrite an offering of common stock if I wanted to present the, if I wanted to finance a project with common stock. Now, if you will, good people, please. It'll take just a minute. Bear with me. Here's your beard. You hook it over your ears. And here is your horse head. I washed it, don't worry.
You know how badly I wanted to yell out, BoJack!
Got your beard?
Have you seen anything?
You look through the nose.
All right, what do you want us to do?
Huh?
What do you want us to do?
Walk in with me. Come on. You walk in first. This is Farmer Brown. Farmer Brown wants to buy two horses. The horses will cost $1 for the two of them. I'm blacking out. Now, Farmer Brown could go to you. Do you have a dollar?
Yeah.
And you, do you have a dollar?
Yes.
Okay. Farmer Brown, please accept the dollar from one of these. That. You see, if he takes all of the money from the equity provider, his debt-to-equity position is 25 to 75. Debt 25, equity 75. If he takes all the money from this one, from the equity provider, he blows his optimal capital structure. If he takes it from the debt provider, again, he blows his optimal capital structure. In other words, whenever any project is financed, it has to be financed by that structure right there. Farmer Brown, how much are you going to take from the equity investor?
3/4.
Good. Please give it to that horse over there. Now, how much are you going to take from the debt? Go ahead, take that quarter. Okay, give it to me. And so by doing this, what he has accomplished is to create the capital to buy the horses, and he has at the same time maintained his optimal capital structure. There remains only one question at the end of this demonstration. Why did that horse over there get 75 cents and I got only 25 cents? Do you know why, sir? Because I am a quarter horse. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.